A Simple Thing, written by Iridan, read by Marianas. Chapter 2. Katra. Din followed Fett back up to the throne room in a daze. Leaving all that Beskar behind felt like leaving one of his own limbs, but Din managed it. Fett was a solid, steady presence just ahead of him. Their business now formalized, so Din at least knew that Fett's palace was safe ground. Fett stayed silent. He evidently knew the palace well, moving through the halls with an unerring sense of direction. Din tracked doors and twists and turns by habit, but his attention kept sliding to the planes of Fett's back, the crisp edges of his Beskar. He doesn't have a full Beskar gum, Din thought absently, in between noting what looked like a pair of false doors seamed into the wall and a long dark hallway that must have been a servant's passage. Fett had a cuirass and gauntlets, had the helmet and a jetpack and plates to protect his knees, but not much else. Compared to Din, who wore almost a complete set of Hunter's Plate, Fett was only half-armored. He'd said that the armor had been his father's, and his father had been a foundling. Did his father's tribe not have much Beskar? Fett himself was big enough to make good use of a full set of heavy plate if he wanted. Why doesn't he want any of that Beskar to finish his armor? Din didn't understand. Granted, there was a lot that Din didn't understand these days. Ever since he'd taken that first job from the imp on Navarro, Din had found himself in a galaxy that didn't make any sense. He'd come up in a practical covert. Their concerns had been over food and armor and a safe place to sleep. Some of the old warriors had known the ancient songs and legends from the days before the Purge, but there hadn't been much use for stories or myths, and their allure had discouraged dreaming of Mandalore's glory days. "Our children can't eat songs," she had said. "We are hunters, not storytellers." Life had been straightforward, simple. Din had hunted and brought back his earnings to split among the covert. The guild had paid well enough, the foundlings had been able to eat, and the injured had been cared for, and the Razor Crest had always had enough fuel to make it to the next job. But then Din had found the kid, and it was as if picking up the kid had shifted Din into an entirely different universe— one that was full of laser swords and strange powers and Mandalorians who showed their faces. Fett's refusal to take more Beskar for himself wasn't that odd compared to the rest of it. At least Fett doesn't have a laser sword. That was something Din could hold onto with both hands. Fett didn't have a laser sword. A lightsaber, Ahsoka Tano had called them. An odd counterpoint to the darksaber Din had found himself stuck with after fighting Gideon on the cruiser. And he didn't want to reclaim a destroyed planet. Fett was, aside from the thing with the Beskar, about as normal as Din could hope for. "He won't be hard to work with," Din reassured himself. Certainly not the most difficult employer Din had ever had. He'd taken a few Black Sun contracts over the years, when guild pucks had been too infrequent or low-paying. Black Sun had loved to underpay or undercut its hunters. At least until Din had gotten tired of being underpaid and set his Black Sun contract a little bit on fire once. After that, they'd paid up on time, though Din had still avoided them when he could. Fett led Din back to the throne room and muttered a gruff, "Wait here," pulling Din out of his thoughts. Fett strode into the room, leaving Din to wait awkwardly in the hall, still half building a map of the palace in his head, though he didn't leave Din to wait for long. Without Fett in it to hold court, the throne room had mostly emptied out. The suns were starting to set outside, orange light slashing through the windows, and the only ones left in the throne room were the Tuskens, the Twi'lek bartender, and Fennec. Fett went straight for Fennec, who rolled up from her slouch over the bar without complaint and followed Fett back to Din. When she got close enough, she cocked an eyebrow Din's way. "I told him you wouldn't just take it," Fennec said. The fact that she'd seen all of the Beskar beneath the palace, too, made Din's mouth thin. His temples throbbed. "This is not the way," he repeated, firmly. Fennec didn't roll her eyes exactly, but she somehow managed to convey the feeling of rolling her eyes without actually doing it. "What is the way? She asked. Din stared at her, caught off guard. He'd never been asked that by an Arueti, an outsider, before. Fennec, Boba said, sounding long-suffering. Leave it. Mando's going to be working with us for a while. Be nice. I am being nice, Fennec muttered. But she subsided, slipping around Boba to head off down the hall in a different direction. Fett tilted his helmet after her. Come on, he said. We'll talk business upstairs. There's too many ears down here. All right. Din didn't know who Fett could be worried about overhearing, but he didn't care where they spoke. It didn't matter if Fett gave Din a job in the throne room, or a palace spire, or the depths of Jabba's old treasure rooms. What mattered is that Din would have something to do. He'd have something to focus on, and some way to earn the Beskar. He let Fett lead again, this time down another hall that sloped gently upwards until it came to a round lift. The lift went up 6 floors. Din counted them to stave off the sudden rush of nausea in his gut and spike of pain in his head, and opened into a long, spare hall that was mostly just windows. This part of Jabba's palace, like most of the rest of Tatooine, didn't have windows covered with glass or plexiplate. The windows up here were really just little more than holes in the wall, carved out and worn smooth to let heat escape and wind lick through the palace's halls to keep the worst of Tatooine's oppressive warmth out of the building. This high up, not even the sand was too bad. Those sturdy durasteel shutters had been fixed outside each window and could be lowered whenever a sandstorm came through. Din paused to look out over the sands. They were a good ways off the ground, not that heights usually bothered Din, and were crossing a walkway between two of the palace's round towers. Jabba's personal rooms are 1 floor up, Fett explained, jerking a thumb over her shoulder to indicate the lift they'd just come out of. His helmet didn't turn, but Din could feel Fett watching him. He straightened under the attention, determined to hide his discomfort. Pain is good, Din told himself firmly, trying to talk himself out of resenting his headache. Pain is a focus. But when we moved in and took over, I couldn't get the smell out, Fett continued. So I'm still in my old set of rooms at the top of this tower here. He gestured down to the end of the walkway, where another lift, this one a bit smaller, waited for them. Fennec takes the stairs. Not sure why, but with some things, it's better to let her do what she wants. Oh, Din said, not sure what else he could add. He searched for some words and came up with, You had rooms here? The old worm was a regular employer of mine. Fett's voice had gone toneless. He was the highest-paying employer in this sector and in 5 others. Din nodded. I contracted here for a few cycles before I won a place in the guild, he said. I was never offered any rooms, though. Din had bedded down with the White Bantha in the desert until he had earned enough credits to buy his way off-planet. The White Bantha's traditional lands weren't exactly close to the palace, but they'd come close enough for a season to give Din the time he'd needed to make enough clank. Fett made a strange sound that might have been a laugh. You weren't missing out on much. When did you run with the Hutts? I would have remembered you. Din and Fett would have fought over the highest-paying jobs like Massif's over a bone. They would have despised each other. Din was still getting to know Fett, had really only spent a few hours with him, but Din knew that much at least. Din smiled. I was young, he said, reaching back through his memories. It was back during the Empire days. I was maybe 20 standard, 21? Things had been looser back then. More than one hunter had gone out of the covert at a time because the Empire's attention had been on breaking places like Onderon, Kashyyyk, Lassan. They hadn't been terribly interested in cracking open coverts, not back then. It had been safe enough to let the young warriors out and about, to let them stretch their legs and gain experience outside of a training ring, so long as they all worked different systems. Din had come to Tatooine looking to make a reputation for himself and had ended up stranded for a while instead, trapped, working for whoever'd pay, until he'd been able to buy the crest and track down the covert. You have a full Beskar Gom? Din shook his head. He'd had no status then. Just this. He rapped his knuckles against his helmet, gently. The metal vibrated, which did nothing for his headache, but Din ignored it. The rest was all scrap I salvaged in the Dune Sea. Durasteel and Corundum, mostly. Fett grunted. Tusken scrap, he said. Din nodded. When he'd finally earned enough money to get off Tatooine and track down the covert, Din's Alor had taken one look at his piecemeal armor and ordered him into the forge. He'd managed to earn her respect by staying alive on Tatooine, by keeping the creed despite all his time away, but she hadn't been very impressed with his ability to armor himself. They reached the second lift, and Fett ushered Din inside, sweeping a palm over the keypad. The doors groaned and slid closed, and the lift began to climb. Din's stomach didn't twist this time. "Door's set to my scans," Fett explained, when he noticed Din watching him curiously. "The Hutt cartel's been ripping itself apart for years, fighting over Jabba's old empire across half a dozen planets, but they'll hear about me eventually and come around. Me and Fennec can get up here, but that's it. We'll get you added to the scans if you're sticking around."
"Are you going to join them, the Hutts?"
Din didn't think that the Hutts would allow a non-Hutt to run a piece of their empire, but stranger things had happened, especially on Tatooine. Bib Fortuna hadn't been a Hutt, but he'd apparently been left to his own devices until Fett and Fennec had intervened.
Fett snorted. "No," he said.
"That'll be a fight," Din observed.
"We're ready for a fight," said Fett, and his voice took on an edge. "Besides, we've got you now, don't we? You can just bring that light cruiser of yours around and send the Hutts running."
"It's not my light cruiser."
Kreese had pretty thoroughly taken over the ship. She and her companions had settled into the bridge like a pack of nesting Minocs. They'd hunted down the ship's remaining Imperials while Din had been in Bacta. Din had spent most of his time on the light cruiser, skulking around in the lower decks, avoiding both Kreese and the Medroid. Fett made a noncommittal noise. He sounded amused. Din eyed him warily, once again on the back foot, not sure what Fett meant or what he was thinking.
"Pity," was all Fett said. "We could have used the firepower."
The lift shuddered to a stop and opened again with another swipe of Fett's hand over the keypad. Din drew back, surprised. Fett's rooms, situated at the top of a tower, were open and airy. The roof was domed and supported by a round, broad pillar in the middle of the room, which housed the lift they had taken, and the room was open on all sides to the air. There were no walls separating Fett's quarters from the high desert, only long, translucent curtains that cawed and billowed in the breeze. Fett's bed was round and half-recessed into the room's central pillar. Other furniture, a dark wooden table, a desk, a stack of metal crates, a workbench, were scattered around the space. A datapad and an earthen mug were perched on a table. A few sturdy-looking metal beams rose up here and there, forming loose separations between Fett's work and sleeping spaces and further supporting the ceiling. Fett took off his helmet.
"Well," he said, watching Din. "Come on, Mandalorian, you won't fall off the edge."
Din left the lift cautiously, still staring. He hit a wince at the title, Mandalorian.
"Is this safe?"
he asked, looking around. "Anybody with a jetpack, or even a decent set of climbing gear, could make it up here without any trouble." Fett waved a careless hand.
"There's blast doors in the ceiling and sensors all around," he said. "I can close them if there's a sandstorm, and if anything bigger than a Jundabird bird comes within a click, the blast doors trigger and seal up. Had them installed myself. Cost me 2 years' pay, but it's safe enough."
"Why?"
Din had to admit that the view was good. The white bones of Mos Eisley could be seen from one side of the room, far enough away that the city looked quaint and homey instead of dingy and wild. The desert lay all around the palace in shades of yellow and orange and red. The first edges of the Jundland Wastes lay off to the east, a high, flat plateau scored with canyons and cliffs. The Dune Sea rolled away on three sides, north and west and east, endless and quiet. Din was sure that the nights up here were radiant, the breeze cool. A nice view wasn't worth getting killed over, though, and Din said so. Fett only smiled and ran a hand over his head, skimming his scars.
"Spent a lot of time in dark, cramped places," he said. "You know how it is, the crest wasn't much bigger than my fire spray."
That was fair. Din's entire life had been spent aboard ships or underground. Aside from a memorable few months his covert had spent in the abandoned treetop villages of Kashyyyk,
his time on Tatooine, and the months he'd spent on Sorgan with the kid. "Believe me," said Fennec, emerging from a small door behind them. The stairs ran up through the central pillar alongside the lift, and she emerged as collected as always, unruffled by the several flights she must have climbed to get up here. "Those walls have to be thicker than a bantha," Din thought, impressed despite his confusion. "I've told him he's being careless, too," Fennec continued. "Jabba's rooms can lock down tighter than an Imperial comms hub."
"If I'd wanted to sleep in an Imperial comms hub, I would have stayed with the Executor on Vader's payroll," said Fett mildly.
"You said Vader couldn't afford you."
"He couldn't," Fett said.
"And his hospitality wasn't much better than the Sarlacc's. I like this better. Makes me feel like I've still got some Shereshi." Din blinked. Mandalorian, he thought, catching the familiar contours of the word. He didn't know what it meant. Oi was Oya, hunt, alive, but the rest of it was just syllables. Din committed it to memory, anyway, saving the sounds, the hard resh, the lifting oi, to turn over later. Fennec snorted. "All it would take is one idiot with a pulse rifle and decent aim and you're a smear on the floor," she said.
Fett just shrugged. "That's why I gave you the biggest pulse rifle."
Din let them bicker, not sure he had the right to jump into their mostly friendly, from what he could tell, argument. Instead of joining in, he padded across Fett's floor to stand at the edge and peered down. It was a hell of a view. Vertigo roared in Din's ears, twisted in his stomach, but he locked his knees and pushed past it. There was no room for weakness here. Din was on the job. "Focus, Mandalorian." Din swallowed around his nausea and scanned the rooftops for vantage points or weaknesses. Din spotted at least 3 points where an assassin could manage a direct shot into the room, but when he turned back around, he saw that none of the vantage points would give a clear shot at Fett's bed. As long as Fett was at least decently alert from anywhere else in the room, it'd be hard to surprise him before he could bring the blast doors down. Risking another bout of vertigo, Din craned his head and looked further down. Din could see the palace's landing bay. Fett's ship, battered as ever, sat alone on a landing pad. Din wondered if any of the bays off the landing pad had any ships inside, or if Fett had cleared them all out when he'd taken over. "Mando," Fett said, his voice cutting through Din's thoughts. Din turned. Fett and Fennec had tabled their argument and were leaning over the workbench, where Fett had pulled up a holo display. "Come here." Din obeyed. Fennec shuffled over to make room for Din at the bench, and Din peered down at the display, blinking. Fett had brought up a map of the Jundland Wastes. When Din leaned over to get a better look, Fett focused the display, narrowing in on a web of canyons. "Who am I hunting?" Din asked, studying the map. He knew the canyons well enough. They were sacred to the Tuskens. No one tribe could claim them as their sole territory. All tribes were permitted to hunt there, for both food and settlers, and they were forbidden from hunting each other. "Right to the point, huh?" Fennec muttered, half-smiling. Din ignored her and focused on Fett, who was watching him with calm, dark eyes. Something about his gaze made Din want to stand very straight, like a warrior presenting himself to his clan leader for inspection. He lifted his chin and hooked his hands into his belt self-consciously, not sure what else to do with them. Fett looked Din up and down.
"You sure you're up for a hunt?" he asked. "How's the head? And the arm? The droid showed me your scans. You took some damage."
Din scowled. "I'm fine," he said. His wrist ached sharply, but Din ignored it. The Dark Trooper had crushed his right arm, cracked 3 of Din's ribs, and done its best to smash his head in. The Beskard staved off the worst of the damage. Din had gone back to that hallway after he'd come out of Bacta. He'd seen the hole he'd left in the wall. If he'd been in Durasteel, he'd be dead. As it was, his right hand was weaker now, and hurt with the slightest change in the weather. But Fett didn't need to know that. The Beskar gauntlet kept his arm straight and his aim steady. That was what mattered. Fett studied Din for a moment, unreadable. Then he nodded.
"You're after a Slimo named Jalto," Fett said, switching the display over to a hovering face.
Din blinked and committed it to memory. Jalto was Zygerian, middle-aged and sun-weathered, with angular features and flat, cold eyes. Din nodded to himself. He'd hunted Zygerians before. As a rule, they were slippery but overconfident. "Who's he to you?" Din asked, though it didn't really matter. "A Hutt spy, we think." Fett tilted his chin at Fennec, who said, "I'm pretty sure, anyway. Never saw him hanging around Bib Fortuna, but when Jabba was in power, Jalt had come planetside every few months, bringing things from Zygerian space. Gifts. Slaves mostly, but information too. He gave Jabba the names of at least 3 contracts." "Contracts?" Din asked. Fennec looked at him. "People Jabba had me kill," she said. Din winced, grateful his helmet hid the motion. "Right." It wasn't that Din was uncomfortable with the idea of wet work. He'd had to kill more than a few of his own targets over the years, and if Kara hadn't needed Gideon alive, Din would have killed him without a thought. Bounty hunters and assassins tended to circle in similar orbits. That was probably how Fennec and Fett knew each other, now that Din took a second to think about it. And while their work didn't overlap exactly, hunting and contract killing were similar enough. "I've just never really done it, I guess." Killing bounties who tried to run or tried to overpower Din's ship was one thing. He'd had plenty of practice putting down mutinies, but he'd never taken a puck, looked at it, and thought, "This one won't be coming back alive." "He stuck his nose in here a few days ago," Fett said, switching the holo display back to the map of the canyons. "Sniffing around, asking Nora and Ushib questions. Ushib caught him wandering around a part of the palace he shouldn't have been in. She tried to hold him, but he stole a speeder and hit the sands."
"You think he's going to report back to the Hutts what he's seen here?"
"I do," said Fett. "He can't get off world through Mos Eisley. I've put his face out at all the ports."
"What if he tries to bribe his way off?"
"Mos Eisley's portmasters were notoriously bribable. I've promised to triple anything Jalto offers to turn him away," Fett said. "Fortuna was an idiot. He ran the business into the ground, but didn't bother poking around Jabba's stores. There's plenty of Pegats lying around. Jalto tried Mos Eisley 2 days ago and couldn't get portage off planet. Last any of my people saw of him, he was heading for the wastes."
"So where's Jalto going?" Din murmured, more to himself than anything. "If he's going through the canyons, he'll be making for Mos Espa. Anchorhead doesn't have a spaceport."
"I don't have any boots on the ground in Mos Espa yet," Fett said. "Fortuna didn't have much here by way of useful employees. It was mostly just Shaburshina."
Din smiled. He knew that word.
"Fortuna's people more or less cleared out once we got here," Fennec put in, propping herself up on her elbows. "The ones we didn't shoot, anyway. A few hunters and guards we know from the old days have turned back up and are willing to work with us, but not enough to post outside the palace." Din nodded. He turned the problem over in his hands. "Jalto could disappear in Mos Espa," he said, "but only if he makes it there. The canyons will be crawling with Tuskens. The Bantha are moving, and it's Tusken hunting season."
"That's why it's best you go instead of Fennec or me," said Fett. "You're less likely to get shot by some young fool trying to prove himself a blooded warrior."
"You're a friend of the Tuskens, too," Din said, though privately he agreed with Fett. Din hadn't really had any fear of the Tuskens since his first visit to Tatooine.
"I'm a friend of one tribe," said Fett. He gestured at Din, at the Beskar and the spear and the tattered cloak.
"Tolerated, but still Gurra. You're known to just about all the tribes now. Word of the great dragon spread."
Din inclined his head. That was fair.
"I can get him," he said.
Fett's dark eyes shone. Din stood even straighter, pleased. "Good. Take anything you want out of the armory. Not that you need much."
"You want him alive?" Din asked, testing the boundaries.
He hadn't put any limitations on his offer to work for Fett. Din would kill for that Beskar if he had to. It was the way.
"Yeah, as long as he doesn't give you too much trouble. I want to know what he knows, and what the rest of the cartel's up to."
Din nodded. He could manage that. The Jundland wastes were fairly close, within a day's ride if Din moved quickly.
"You got a speeder I can borrow? The one I brought isn't big enough for two."
"Take what you want," said Fett, with a careless wave of his hand. "What's mine is yours." expression safe underneath his helmet, Din let himself roll his eyes. That wasn't true. Fett and Din were allies, but Din wasn't of Fett's tribe. Still, borrowing a speeder wouldn't cost Din much. He still had credits in his pocket, and if the cost of the speeder and the fuel was more than what Din had on him, Fett could take it out of his bounty. Shouldn't take more than a few days, Din said, checking the position of the suns, now swung so low over Tatooine's horizon that the whole desert had become a sea of fire. With a decent speeder, Din could make it well into the canyons before the moon set in the morning. We'll look for you, Fett said. Good hunting, Mandalorian. Jaren, Din said, before his mind could catch up with his tongue. Mandalorian wasn't right. Not anymore. Fett, to his credit, only nodded, his expression opening for just a moment before it closed off again. Jaren, he said. Hearing his own name in Fett's mouth made Din's breath stutter. It had been a long time since an ally had said his name. Oh yeah, Jaren. Din dipped his head, accepting the job, and made for the lift. Fett and Fennec went back to discussing their business. Din hoped to slip out down the lift and disappear, his head whirling between the Beskar and the vaults and the job that lay before him. But when he got to the lift and swiped a hand over the keypad, the door wouldn't open. Din closed his eyes briefly. Right, he thought. The door's coded to Fett, not me. That was fine. There were more ways out of this room than the elevator. Din craned around, saw that Fett and Fennec were still busy over the holo display, and grinned to himself. He took four long strides to the edge of Fett's room, the desert breeze stirring his cloak, and stepped out into empty air before his vertigo could catch up to him and throw him off balance. The heartbeat of suspended gravity just before a fall was Din's favorite. He'd loved the feeling of momentary weightlessness, even as a child, and when the teachers in the Fighting Corps had brought out jetpacks and started to train the foundlings in the way of the rising phoenix, Din had taken to it like a silic lizard to the sands. For a thin sliver of time, he hung there off the edge of Fett's palace, the whole of the desert spread out before him. And then gravity took over and Din dropped like a stone, wind rushing past him. An alert flashed across his visor. 15 years ago, Din might have waited until the last possible moment to engage the jetpack, racing gravity to the ground. He was a bit too old to be playing games like that now, though, and the whiplash would likely make his back ache. He was on a job, anyway, and he probably didn't have much time before the intermittent nausea kicked back in. Din engaged his jetpack at a responsible, reasonable height before the next roof could get too close. He regained height easily, rolling in the air to check behind him. The blast doors around Fett's room had slammed shut, as Fett had said they would, and now Fett's tower was indistinguishable from the rest.
Well, at least the security system works.
Din spared a brief moment to wonder what Fett's face looked like, if Fennec was laughing, before he focused again. Din dropped down between another pair of towers, aiming for the landing pad. The pad's sole attendant, a dried-out, sour-looking Nuxon, didn't so much as twitch as Din made his approach and landed solidly on the ground, sand swirling at his feet. The lack of guards and attendants made sense now. If Bib Fortuna had really been as bad at running Jabba's business as Fett had claimed, most of Jabba's more competent lackeys would have long since moved on. Criminal enterprises grew in the Outer Rim like Cahel cave fungus grew in the dark. Any half-decent guard, pickpocket, slicer, and thief could find their way into half a dozen other syndicates without any trouble. All Fett and Fennec had to work with now were the dregs who couldn't make it with another crew, and the few who were loyal enough to come back once they'd heard that Fortuna had died. And me. Din wasn't sure what that made him. A dreg or a loyal massif. He decided not to think about it too deeply. Hey, Nuxon, Din called gruffly, making sure to stay far enough back that his air filters wouldn't pick up the Nuxon's species-specific stench. You have a speeder bike or a transport I could hire? Something big enough for at least two? The Nuxon looked up, blinked a slow, double-lidded blink, and flopped a limp hand towards a bay around the starboard side of Fett's battered Firespray-class ship.
Cheshaku, Banaga! Sungala Junkie!
Din sighed. Of course it is. Thanks. True to the Nuxon's word, all of the speeder bikes in storage were basically scrap. Most of them older than the Empire and rusted through to bare wires. None of the land transports would engage, though there was a Bark two-seater that was decent enough, tucked away in a corner. Din managed to get it to rumble to life after a few kicks and choice curses. The Nuxon didn't look up as Din swung a leg over the speeder and eased it out into the sands. He was out in the desert before long, the palace shrinking in the distance, the shadows deepening as the suns vanished and took the last purple light of the day with them. Things had always made sense to Din in the desert. The suns disappeared and night fell over Tatooine like a hammer, the temperature plummeting so fast that the wiring inside Din's Beskar whined as it shifted from cooling to warming. Tatooine's daylight creatures, Bantha and Dubax and broad-winged Junda birds, vanished, retreating to their caves and burrows for the night. The nocturnal creatures began to move. Anuba yipped in the distance, their packs gathering together to begin the hunt. Bladebacks trundled along among the dunes. Canyon crates, much smaller than the great dragon that had terrorized Mos Pelgo, yowled and shrieked. Din had always liked the order of the Great Dune Sea. Tatooine appeared wild and chaotic, a storm of criminal enterprises and desperate people and fearsome raiders. But really, once one made planetfall and stood in the sand, everything made sense. Everything had its place. Predators hunted and prey were eaten. Bantha moved in herds to protect their young, and Anuba packs grew to meet the challenge. Even the Tuskens had their place. They were strong and brutal, and Din had been very, very lucky to have been given Alaina by the White Bantha all those years ago instead of Sharp Whack in the head. But the Tuskens had their place, too. Nothing in the Dune Sea was made to support a settled population. Only stubborn outlanders tried. Tuskens followed the law of the wind, moving from sand dune to sand dune, following water as it moved through its secret places underground, and Bantha as they wandered from scrub to scrub. As the moons rose and his speeder skimmed across the desert, Din's thoughts grew clearer and sharper. His body came alive, the persistent headache fading to a dull throb behind his ear, the weariness in his limbs receding. The stars lit up the desert as well as any sun, and the wind died, the sand clearing and revealing the way. Din's visor picked up Bantha tracks, deep impressions in the sand left by broad feet. A small herd had come through here, headed for the canyon lands. Din nodded to himself and angled his speeder after them. There were no roads in the Juntland Wastes. Roads didn't last long on Tatooine. But the Bantha knew the safe paths into the canyons, the route taught from mother to calf year after year, and Din knew that as long as he followed the Bantha, he'd make it to the canyon safely. Making it out of the canyons would be a different challenge, but Din had a while yet before he had to worry about that. "Jalto first," he said to himself, skimming the sands. Then an escape plan. It was Tuscan hunting season. Despite what he told Fett, Din planned to tread carefully. The White Bantha had taken him in and looked after him, adopted Din as one of their own, but Tuskens weren't one unified people. The friendship of one tribe could very well have earned Din the enmity of another. The Sunrock were his allies, too, Din supposed. Killing a greater crate tended to band people together, Tusken, settler, and Mandalorian alike, but there were as many Tusken tribes in the desert as there were herds of Bantha. "If I'm lucky, I should be fine. One lone man in Beskar is not an appealing target." Din was only lucky sometimes, but he didn't plan to spend long in the canyons. "Just need to find Jalto and get out," Din thought. He followed the Bantha tracks to the first towering jut of red rock. According to the Tuskens, the canyons were as old as Tatooine itself, formed when the rivers had run above ground instead of underneath it. Din could believe the stories. Despite their height, the canyons were smooth and gentle, their walls worn down by water and wind, sinuous and flowing like a river. Din knocked his bike down to the lowest setting, sacrificing speed for silence. The old bark rattled, but the engine quieted, muffled by the high winds above. Good, Din thought. As soon as he got through the mouth of the canyon, a complete and total darkness fell. The shape of the rock blocked out most of the stars and the moons. His visor adjusted automatically, filtering everything through night vision. Din found the bantha tracks again, the herd moving in single file now, and started off after them. He was careful to scan the walls and cliffs every time he rounded a curve. Jalta wouldn't know to climb the canyon walls and take shelter in the Kirikfly caves pocketed 20 or 30 feet up off the ground, but raiders would. Din stopped a few times to check for signs of Jalta. He didn't find any tracks, but he did find fresh carbon burns on the canyon walls, a smear of speeder exhaust, a discarded canteen. He's armed, Din thought to himself, on a speeder, and down at least one canteen of water. The marks could have been made by another traveler through the canyons, but they were fresh, and most locals knew to avoid the wastes during hunting season. No one lived in the canyons, not even Tuscans. Years ago, Din had heard of a mad sorcerer who had made the canyons his home, but that was just a cantina tale. There wasn't anything for most sentients to eat in the canyons, aside from the migrating bantha, the odd blade back in canyon crates, all three of which tended to resent being hunted, and Kirik flies made the place unbearable for anyone without Beskar and a thick kute. No, odds are this is my bounty, Din thought, running his fingertips over the carbon marks. What was he shooting at? There were no bodies, Tuscan, animal, or otherwise. No blood, either. It was as if Jalta had come roaring through here, shooting at empty air. Strange. Din climbed back onto the bark and followed the canyon as it wound and weft its way through the desert. Not much grew down here, just a few tufts of puntan grass and the stray, stubborn cedar tree. A canyon crate's hunting call rose up from somewhere off in the distance. Din paused to scan the rocks again, his thermal sensors flickering. Crates were cold-blooded and hard to spot, especially if they held still, but Din was reasonably sure there weren't any nearby. Canyon crates were easier to handle than a great dragon anyway. Din could kill one without getting swallowed. He checked the straps holding his spear to his back anyway, just to make sure that they'd release smoothly if he needed to grab the spear in a hurry. Din followed the marks on the canyon walls. He couldn't figure out what Jalta had been shooting at. The marks were regular and constant. There was a new burn scored in the canyon every 50 or 60 feet. Was he trying to mark a path? The canyons did branch off now and then, opening into a maze of other gaps and crevices. Din had been taught to see which gaps were true paths and which were false trails that would dead-end suddenly, crevices that would narrow and narrow until an unwary traveler got trapped trying to claw their way out. But does Jalta know to see? The Tuscans, who'd rescued Din all those years ago, had taught him to read the desert. Bantha wouldn't move down crevices that were too narrow, and cedar trees only grew above pockets of water. Din could judge which passages would be safe to wander down by looking for bantha tracks and tree roots. But to an outlander, all of the rocks probably looked more or less the same. Now that Din knew what to look for, he saw Jalta's reasoning. He had been shooting the walls to map out the canyons. If he'd been in the canyons for a few days, Jalta was likely starting to panic. He'd gotten turned around somehow, and instead of finding his way to Mos Espa, he'd found himself trapped, so now he was scoring the walls to help himself see where he'd already been. Din snorted. That's not wise. Jalta should have just shot flares into the sky or painted himself with bantha blood. Anything with eyes would be able to track him now. Still, Jalta's carelessness made Din's job easier, so Din coaxed the speeder a bit faster, confident that he was now on Jalta's trail. The suns had fully risen again, thin shafts of light piercing the canyons, when Din found Jalta's speeder. Din was traveling slow enough that sharp turns didn't pose much of a danger, but Jalta had clearly been traveling too fast. He'd taken a turn too sharply, too quickly, and had found himself face-to-face with a cedar tree without any time to turn aside. Cedar trees were old, strong, and made to withstand the extremities of Tatooine's desert. Jalta's speeder hadn't stood a chance. The front end of it was still in the tree, actually, buried in the cedar's red trunk. The other half of the speeder was scattered across the canyon floor. The air was heavy with the smell of burnt metal and sap. Fuel had spilled, shiny and thick, and when Din hopped off his own speeder to take a closer look, he saw blood on the sand, too. He stripped off a glove to touch a droplet. It was tacky. Jalta wasn't far. He scanned the whole scene, piecing it together. The Zygurian had come around the corner too quickly, hit the tree, and wrecked his speeder. Jolt had been flung from the wreckage. Din could see where his body had hit the sand. He'd been wounded. There was a trail of blood leading deeper into the canyon, into the shade. Din smiled grimly. Got you, he thought. Din racked the bark down to its lowest setting and set off again, skimming a foot or so off the canyon floor so he didn't lose the trail in the dust. He checked the position of the suns. Nearly noon. Din rounded a corner, speeder first, and his instincts flared. He ducked. A blaster bolt whizzed past his head. Found you. Din, rather than slowing down and letting Jalto get off another shot, accelerated. Blasters shot in straight lines. Din knew, more or less, where Jalto would be. A reddish blur dove out of the way of Din's speeder. Din killed the engine and leapt off before the bar could stop moving, drawing his own blaster. He hit the sand lightly, kicking up dust, and ducked again when another bolt of red light went whizzing past his face. Din took half a heartbeat to get the shape of the battlefield in his mind's eye, and then he moved. Zygurians were taller than humans, usually, lean as vine tigers, and ones with combat training were fast, but Din was faster. He focused on the reddish shape and lunged. Pound for pound, he was heavier than the Zygurian, bolstered by his armor, and Jalto hadn't been prepared to be tackled. Jalto yelped and toppled backwards, flailing. He managed to hold onto his blaster, but not his head covering. A roll of cloth made to shield sensitive eyes from Tatooine's harsh sunlight fell away, and Jalto threw his other hand over his eyes with a yowl of pain. Din's momentum carried them both into the sand. Jalto got one of his pawed feet between himself and Din and kicked. Din's cuirass took the blow and spread the force out of it across his chest, Beskar ringing, but Din was still shoved away. He rolled with it, letting Jalto's energy save some of his own, and came up on one knee. Jalto was staggering to his feet, too, one hand still over his eyes, the other waving a blaster around. His fur was thick with sand. Din braced himself and aimed a gauntlet, ready to rope Jalto down. The hairs on the back of Din's neck stood up, and behind the Zygurian he saw a flash of silver. It was only a glimmer, a moment of reflected sunlight, but Din would know the shine of Beskar anywhere. Din stared after it, surprised. Beskar, he thought, searching the shadows for another glimmer. Here? But who? The half-second of distraction cost him. Jalto tore his hand away from his eyes, got a good look at Din, and swung the end of his blaster down with all the force he could muster, aiming for the vulnerable gap between the end of Din's gauntlet and the Beskar plate that backed his glove. Jalto's aim was pretty accurate. Din's mind went white with pain. He might have shouted, but he didn't hear it over the roar between his ears. Only instinct kept Din from rearing backwards and giving Jalto the opening he needed to lunge for the idling bark. Jalto lunged straight into a face full of Beskar, and Din lashed out with his other hand, catching Jalto by the throat. Jalto struggled, blaster falling as he brought his own hands up to claw at Din, who forced himself up on both feet. But Jalto's hands, ending in Zygurian claws, only sparked as they scraped Din's gauntlets. Din followed through like a Mandalorian. He brought his head back and snapped it forward, slamming the ridge of his helmet into Jalto's nose. Blood sprayed. Jalto buckled, stunned. Din let him slump down into the sands. He tucked his injured arm close to his chest and gasped for breath, blinking furiously to clear his vision.
"Dink karking ferric!" he hissed, once he could speak without screaming. "If he broke my arm again, I'm going to kill him."
Din had just gotten the med droid to leave off poking and prodding him. He didn't want any more metal screwed into his arm either. Metal should be outside the body, armoring and protecting it. Once his mind cleared a little, Din forced himself to curl and uncurl his fingers. Pain jolted through him, making nausea claw at the bottom of his ribs, but he could move his fingers, which was good. He rotated his wrist and swore in Huttiz, then Tuskra, and Rodian for good measure. "Sprained, I think." Jalto stirred weakly, coming to. Din scowled and kicked him. Jalto stopped moving.
"My own damn fault," Din thought.
He checked the curve in the canyon again. Whatever he'd seen that had distracted him was gone. He should be kicking himself, not Jalto. The desert often lied. The suns and the heat were tricksters, always up to mischief. A sprained wrist was the least that could have happened during a moment of inattention. Din gave himself another few seconds to feel sore and old and sorry for himself. Then he shook off the pain and the frustration both and focused on the task at hand. Jalta wouldn't get the opportunity to strike at Din again. Din flipped the still-stunned Zygerian over and bound his hands behind his back. Then he went through Jalta's pockets, discarding anything that could be used as a weapon. Jalta didn't have much. A busted comlink, a vibro knife in one boot, a mostly empty canteen of water, a few pegettes. Din kept the comlink for Fett, even if it was broken, drank the water, and tossed the vibro knife away. It would make some Tusken happy, Din was sure. By the time Jalta finally stirred again, moaning weakly, Din's wrist throbbed, but was manageable. He breathed through it until the pain had faded to an ever-present but steady hum, background noise, instead of a red, raw alarm blaring through his nerves. "Get up," Din said flatly. Jalta moaned again. "Get up," said Din. He cocked his blaster and leveled it at the Zygerian. "I won't ask a third time."
"I'll pay triple what Fett is," Jalta said, rising to his knees. "Credits, spice, slaves, you name it, I'll pay your price."
Din shot him in the shoulder. He didn't usually go out of his way to rough up his bounties. There was almost never any point. A bounty was a job, nothing more, and it was unseemly to harm those in his power. Dishonorable. But Din didn't have any honor, not anymore. And his wrist hurt, and he didn't like slavers. Jalta's scream was satisfying. "I can't be bought," Din said. He cocked his blaster again, the message clear. Jalta staggered to his feet. His eyes were slitted like a loth cat's, wide with pain and fear. He didn't offer Din any more credits. "Get on the back of the speeder," Din said. "If you try and run, I'll shoot you in the knees next." Jalta didn't argue. Something pricked at the edge of Din's awareness. A warning. He stilled. "We're being watched." "Don't move," he told Jalta, and slowly turned around, flicking his visor to thermal. High up on the ridge, outlined in the orange-red heat of a living body, stood a Tusken Raider. Din switched his visor back to standard vision. The canyons were too shadowed and the sun's too bright for Din to see anything that might have identified the Raider as a friend or an enemy. Tusken robes were all more or less the same, but Gaderfi were as unique to individual warriors as Beskar Gam was to Mandalorians, and Gaderfi were just as often adorned with carvings or marks that showed a Tusken's tribe and status. "Stay behind me," Din said, shifting so that Jalta was protected by Din's Beskar.
"They'll kill you just as easily as they would me," Jalta hissed, but he did as he was told.
Getting shot again was probably preferable to being dragged to a raider camp. The Tusken Raider watched them impassively.
"Don't move," Din repeated. He narrowed his eyes and picked out three more shadows against the rocks.
Tuskens hunt in groups. Moving slowly, Din raised his hand so the Tusken could see them and made the sign for Tuskra. He winced behind his helmet as the motion jarred his wrist, but he was pretty sure now that his wrist wasn't broken. The raider on the ridge watched for a moment, still as a statue. Din didn't see a rifle or blaster on him, just the brutal point of a Gaderfi over the raider's shoulder, but he wouldn't be surprised if one of the shadows hiding among the rocks was a sniper. Finally, after a long, tense moment, the raider raised his own hands so Din could see them, and made the broad, exaggerated signs for which tribe?
"White Bantha," Din replied.
He hesitated, then added, "I am a friend to Sun Rock, too." Din's knowledge of the intercomplexities of Tusken tribal politics was about 15 standard years out of date, but he hoped that White Bantha and Sun Rock had more allied tribes than enemy ones. The Tusken was still for another moment. "Tuskra," he signed back, accepting Din's claim. Din sighed in relief. "Get on the back of my speeder," Din said to Jalta. "Don't try to run. If you do, you'll be shot."
"That raider doesn't have a blaster,"
Jalta said, some of his confidence returning now that he had realized that Din knew enough Tuscan to negotiate for their safety.
No, Din agreed, but the snipers in the rocks behind him do.
And you've trespassed, you've hurt one of their sacred trees. That raider on the ridge is a blooded warrior. His honor demands that he hunt you down for damaging a cedra tree.
So why is he letting you walk out of here, then? The Zygerian challenged.
Din looked at him.
Because I am a Tuscan, he said.
It wasn't true, not really, but it was worth it to see Jalta blanch.
But you're Mandalorian, Jalta blustered.
There's not as much difference as you think, Din said, which was true. Din wasn't a Mandalorian anymore either, but Jalta wouldn't understand what Darmanda meant, and Din was tired of hearing Jalta speak anyway. Now get on the speeder before I decide the Tuscans can have you.
The prospect of falling into Tuscan hands shut Jalta up. He climbed onto the back of the bark without any more complaints. Din tore a few strips off Jalta's discarded headpiece and used them to tie Jalta's legs to the speeder to make sure he wouldn't try to jump off on the ride back to Fett's. Bounty secured, Din turned his attention back to the raider, who still stood watching from the ridge.
They've been on your trail for a while, Din said. He kept watching the Tuscan as he slowly climbed into the pilot's seat. If Fett decides to let you go, leave Tatooine and don't ever come back. Tuscans don't forget.
Jalta was silent. They both knew that Fett probably wasn't going to let him go.
Din started the speeder and eased it back the way he'd come. The raider watched them go, still as stone, until the canyon turned and he was lost from sight. Din felt Jalta shift behind him, moving his legs to test the strength of the ties.
Don't even think about it, Din said. They'll follow us out of the canyons. If you try and run for it, they will shoot you, and I'll leave you to them.
Fett wants my information, Jalta argued.
Din shrugged. He wants to make sure you're not a problem. If I leave you with the Tuscans, I know you won't be a problem ever again.
Jalta shut up again and didn't give Din any more trouble as they left the Jundland Wastes. The trip went faster now that Din wasn't scouring the dust for tracks. No other raiders popped up on Din's visor, and they made it back out into the open desert without further trouble, Fett's palace wavering in the distance like a mirage. Din picked up speed. He was eager to turn Jalta over and be done with the whole day. His arm hurt. The same Nuxin was on duty at the landing pad when Din finally brought the speeder in, the sun's beginning to set, and Din allowed himself to feel a flash of pride.
One day, he thought.
He'd worked faster than he'd initially thought. Din didn't bother to check in with the Nuxin. He parked the speeder where he'd found it, noting the fuel gauge, and swung down, getting a good grip on the back of Jalto's neck as he did. He caught the ties and hauled the Zygerian to his feet. Jalta was stiff underneath Din's hand, shoulders up, but he was past fighting. Fett's palace closed around both of them like a vise. Din kept a hand on Jalta as he steered the Zygerian through the palace. Jalta became tenser and tenser, every step stiff and jerky, but there wasn't anything he could do, not even as Din shoved him down the wide, flat steps and into the throne room. Instead of Fett sprawled across the throne, Fennec was waiting, perched on one of the throne's arms like she owned it, a blaster in pieces in her lap. She looked up when Din entered and smiled like a Nexu catching sight of its favorite meal.
That was fast, she said.
There were more people in the throne room this time. A band played quietly in a corner, the tune a little brighter than it had been when Fett had held court, and there were more sentients gathered around the bar than there had been yesterday when Din had first come to the palace. Conversation quieted as Din walked in. Fennec turned her attention to Jalta.
Welcome back, she said. He give you any trouble, Jaren?
Some, Din admitted, wishing that Fennec hadn't said his name. His wrist still ached where Jalta had brought his blaster down on it.
I'll have to get used to it. They can't call me Mando anymore.
Nothing I couldn't handle.
Our employer's done with business for today, Fennec told Jalta, putting her blaster back together without needing to look as she did it.
Every piece made a satisfying click as it snapped together.
So you'll just have to make do with our hospitality for the night.
A2, Zero, why don't you escort our guest to his rooms? A massive, bare-chested human man and a narrow, spindly-looking droid peeled away from the bar and nodded at Fennec. The man hooked a hand under Shalto's arm, and the pair hauled him out of the throne room, down a small, dark hallway that, if Din's memory held, led down into Jabba's old dungeons. Fennec cocked an eyebrow at Din.
"That was fast," she said. "How hard did he fight?"
"Hard enough until some raiders showed up," Din said. Then it came quietly.
"Did the raiders give you any trouble?"
Din shook his head.
"You need medbay?"
He shook his head again, irritation flickering in his chest. Fennec finished cleaning her blaster.
"How about dinner?" she said.
"I'll tell Boba you're back while you're eating." "Dinner's fine," Din allowed. He hadn't eaten on the job, and he relaxed at the mention of Fett. Fett would hear that Din had done what he'd been told, and would bring a few Beskar ingots as payment. Din didn't know what he'd do from there. Push Fett to give him another job? Go out to Mos Pelgo and see if Vanth had any spacecraft? Bring the Beskar back to Kryze and the light cruiser to stockpile for whenever they found other Mandalorians? But food was a good first step. Then sleep, maybe. Din could probably force himself to sleep here in the palace. It would be safer than renting a room somewhere in Mos Eisley, anyway. He needed to look after his injuries, and he only wanted to do that in private. Fennec nodded. "Nora's got a menu," she said, gesturing at the Twi'lek managing the bar. "She'll set you up. You can eat in the same room as last time. Want me to watch the door?" "No," Din said, shaking his head. You're busy." Fennec rolled her eyes, but didn't push him on it. Her attention was stolen away by the human and the droid, A2 and Zero, though Din wasn't sure which was which, returning from the dungeons. Din made his way over to the bar. The others gathered around it, cleared out of his way instinctively, though their chatter didn't stop. Nora, the Twi'lek from yesterday, with the light blue skin and long tattooed leku, smiled at Din.
"What'll it be?" she asked.
"Food," Din said. Nora laughed.
"We have that. What do you want?"
"Whatever's still warm is fine," Din said. He reached into his kute for some credits, but Nora shook her head.
"You don't pay," she explained. "The boss explained it. You want to eat in private?"
Din nodded. Tension spiked in his belly.
"I can pay," he tried, but Nora shook her head again.
"The boss was clear," she said. "Any scarier than you, sweetheart?" Din twitched. He didn't think he'd ever been called sweetheart before, and he didn't think he liked it. But he didn't want to get Nora in trouble with Fett if Fett had ordered her not to take payment from Din, so Din only held his hands up and left, making his way for the little conference room off to the side where he'd eaten last time. The room was empty. Din closed the door behind him, wishing, despite what he told Fennec, that it had a lock, and waited. After a few moments, there was a soft chime noise, and a panel set into the wall sprang open. The panel was maybe the size of his banner. Waiting inside was a plate of chuba stew, rich and steaming, alongside fluffy glass rice and another cup of water. Din took the food carefully and waited until the panel closed before he took off his helmet. He ate less ravenously this time. Chuba stew wasn't as spicy as Tusken food, let alone Tingular, but it was filling, the kind of food a soldier would eat to keep his strength up, and the taste was mild enough that Din could stomach it. He forced himself to clear his plate. His body needed the nutrients if he was going to get back into fighting strength and keep working for Fett. Din finally pushed the empty plate away, drained his cup of water, and reached for his helmet again, intending to rejoin Fennec in the throne room and get a better read on Fett's court, when he was stopped by a faint sound. Din frowned. His hearing wasn't the best anymore. Too many years of getting knocked around, and caught in explosions, had left him with a faint, near-constant ringing in his ears. The auditory sensors in his helmet helped filter that out and pick up ambient noise, but without his helmet on, the low, constant whine in his ears tended to drown out anything too quiet. But he listened harder, tilting his head a bit and pressing a hand over one ear to muffle the buzz, and heard the sound again. It was faint, but Din had heard it. A muffled, fleshy thump, the unmistakable sound of someone being struck, followed by a cry of pain. Din's heart rate spiked, his weariness vanishing.
"Someone is being hurt," he thought. "Is it Fett?"
Fennec was, as far as Din could tell, in charge of the palace's guards. She'd been sitting in the throne room like nothing was wrong, but if there weren't enough guards to cover the palace, would she even know if an assassin or a Hutt enforcer had snuck in? Jabba had ruled the palace longer than Fett had been alive. His people would know ways in and out of the palace that Fett just didn't. Din tugged his helmet back on, plate forgotten, and tuned his auditory sensors to their highest setting. When he heard the sound of something flat and heavy striking flesh again, it was clearer. Din followed it without thinking. He switched the safety on his blaster off. The sounds were regular, almost rhythmic, punctuated by human cries of pain. Din picked up the pace, loping down the hall until he reached the last door, which was closed. Din paused and listened hard. There was a crack, sharp and heavy, and another muffled sound of pain. He didn't know how many people were in the room, what their positions were, or what they wanted from Fett, but Din was still in his Beskar. He was fairly confident that he could handle it. He opened the door, and then Din froze like he'd been cast in carbonite. He didn't understand what he was seeing. The picture was clear enough. There was Fett, out of Beskar and wearing his usual black Tusken-style robes. And there was another man, standing upright, palms pressed flat against the wall, stripped to the waist. The shirtless man's back was red and striped, just beginning to bruise around his shoulders, and as Din watched, he saw why. Fett, his attention entirely focused on the second man, drew his arm back, a long, wide-tailed whip trailing in his grip, and struck. The whip cracked against the man's back, and a new red line bloomed a moment later. The man moaned. It was the moan that made Din realize he shouldn't be watching. It wasn't a moan of pain. Or it was, but it was more than pain. Whatever this was, whatever the shirtless man had done to get Fett to hit him, it was personal. Din tore his eyes away like he'd been burned, blushing underneath his helmet. He must have made some sort of sound of his own, a hiss of surprise or shock. The shirtless man didn't look up, but Fett did. Fett's eyes were black as the night sky. His expression opened, confusion and surprise flickering across his face, but Din didn't wait to see if his expression would shift to outrage. He uprooted himself from the floor and fled. Din was halfway down the hall before he could force himself to slow down. A tactical retreat was one thing, but he didn't want to run like a coward, even if he didn't understand what he had seen. His mind raced. Those marks on the kneeling man's back would bruise. Din knew it instinctively. They'd deepen, turn blue and purple and black, and the man would be able to feel them every time he moved, every time he stretched his back or rolled his shoulders. If he wore any kind of armor at all, he'd feel it every time the armor pressed against his back. He'd only have to move a little, shift a bit to remember everything. No, Din told himself, dragging his mind away. No, that's not why Fett is doing that. Pain, Din had always been taught, was a focus. It informed the warrior of how he'd failed and instructed him in how he could fight better next time. Pain was a tool, but it wasn't a tool to be intentionally sought out. It was a punishment, not a reward, an aid, not a need. If Din couldn't focus without pain, it was because he was weak. A warrior didn't seek out ways to impair their ability to fight. He could use pain, yes, that was allowed. But he wasn't allowed to want it. The sound of a whip cracking across bare skin echoed in his ears. Din bit his lip, just to flood his mouth with salt. The sting was sharp and immediate, bright enough that it chased away most of the lingering ache in his arm and his head. He was tempted to do it again, to worry the tiny wound until it bloomed. But that wasn't allowed either. Din made it down the hall and around the corner, half blind with confusion and mortification and desire. He skirted the throne room entirely. He didn't want to be around anyone. He didn't want anyone to see. Memory and instinct carried Din down another hall, this one lined with little sleeping chambers. Guest rooms, most of them given over to dust. Rooms that have locks on the doors, Din told himself. He found the last room at the end of the hall and pushed himself through it, hands twitching as he engaged the lock. His pulse thundered in his ears. As soon as the door engaged, he tore his helmet off, his gauntlets, fumbled with the seals on his cuirass and his pauldrons. The Beskar sang as it clattered to the ground. When he'd stripped down to his kute, Din let himself collapse back onto the bed, scattering dust. He stared at the door. The red light blinked at him, calm and soothing. He was safe. What? He thought, wondering what he'd just seen and why it had made his heart race. The Kark was that.